Gray, Rio 7. You arrive back in Italy. What happened to you next, Mr. Gray?
I went to the line at a place called Boscardo. Before the Gothic line, you see. And there was some time, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I forget, I don't remember. But a wonderful 4 weeks. Had football matches, race meetings, sports, you know, and loads of people very, very kind of us. Before I went to the line. And we moved up. Our first object was a place called Isola del Piano. The only flat place. A little transition, a little flat place. And of course, then they were waiting for us, you know, and a lot of casualties there. And I think the most notable one at the time was like Charles Kemp. He played football for Manchester United. He's a wonderful lad, lovely lad, you know. He's a Manchester United apprentice, he's a lovely football, you know. Very, very sad about him getting blamed, you know. Why him of all people? And they went to a place called Salagetio. That was the next objective.
Can we look at the objectives and the way that you were, you know, you took them and what was happening to you? You say the Germans were basically waiting for you.
Right.
They were in position. Now, were they still in this situation of being higher up than you were?
Oh, indeed, yes. It's the same old route as again, you see. I see our third objective was Salagetio. I forget the name of the second one. But Salagetio was a town on top of a long, slow hill, you see. At the bottom was a dried up river bed with bamboo clumps going around. It was there, I witnessed a great example of bravery ever saw in my life. But we advanced in open order, chopped down by machine gun fire and heavily, very heavy casualties. The first time I ever known anybody in front of the German infantry with the Royal Army Medical Corps. And this lad was in the sketchy bear up the hill. In front of all that weather and fire, he had a little stand above his head with 2 arms with a red cross on it. That's what they said. What bravery, you know. He mixed up with the Sherwood forces. There were about 40 prisoners, Germans, you know. And there was a black sergeant, a Negro sergeant, in the forces. And he got the bloody prisoners up. He said, come on, you bugger, get up there. He made them get them up there.
What happened to the young man that was carrying there?
RMC. I don't know. I was crawling back with a stretcher bearers in a clump of bamboo. I was sitting badly wounded, man. I noticed this lad. Every time his heart beat, he saw the blood spurt at him. He had no water. And I got this lad with the last available carrier. Put about 4 or 5 jerry cans on the back. And I turned and blew him away very late at me with a water bottle in. He wasn't far behind. He never was. Well, I stood and he was along there somewhere. And I hear the slap, slap, and crash hit. And the dirty big bang. He went out of mine. And I went up to the last carrier. And I think them 7 lads must have died of wounds from there. But the MO was Captain Morris, Ewan's bosman. He's a great MO. He wrote a lot of notes. The MO part of the Royal Army Medical Corps handbook. What are they going on?
When you went into attacks and men were falling wounded, were you supposed to stop and help them?
No, we couldn't do that.
That's strict orders.
You'd be shot yourself, wouldn't you? Well, you took cover of the guys in there and you got as far away from tanks as possible. Of course, tanks brought the stokers, right? On the artillery.
What was it like under a Stuka attack?
Well, I tell you about the Stoker, you know, with all the missiles that were after the tank, you know. Them lads, who'll be cleared, the Stoker pilots, because they were slow, cumbersome. They might have been out of it in 1939, but when the lovely lightning caught and the Spitfire and Hurricane, they had no chance. And I got the arm off front, and my first thing with the line, you know, this cowboy affair, you know. There were some big Yankee long tongs, you know, the big cannon, what they had, the 9-inch cannon. And one day they came out way out to the Stokers. And there wasn't one got back. You know, the lovely light was up there. By itself sometimes, knocking them down 4 and 5. You know. It was a slow, cumbersome thing. Okay, 1933, 1939.
Were you well supported by the RAF in every action?
Yes. Jersey Air Force was there. When you want them, they were there. I was far removed on a tuna command. I never felt well supported, the criminal one. And when the Yankees were there, and the Yankees were at the Air Force as well. And the Harry bombers and the Spitfires of the bombs. See, they can't have to leave the bomb, leave the plane, and open up the three bombs. Come up, one of the funny incidents I remember, we kept it to learn on the ground. We came up the line, and in a vineyard, and all new family, really big, beautiful grapes, the black ones, lying down there, picking big grapes. But they called me and I said, in a white flash, I looked, the guy tried ball had been shaving the lad in the face. He was playing out of violet. What the hell going on all of a sudden? The aeroplane, and I was an aircraft recognition expert at the time. I said, what's that, Terry? I said, it's a Clipwing Spitfire. With somebody there, look at the black crosses. FW-190. And he came, and I said, the cannons leave the aeroplane, and the three bombs came out, and the ITI bomb, and he was what I didn't. And he said, down on the roadside. The army, the ammunition was piled high down the roadside. He got the idea what it was like. The ammunition piled high, but up for miles and miles, you know. Stacks of ammunition piled high by the roadside.
Must have been frightening under a dive bomber attack.
That's right, but all I can do is hope for the best. You know, get your head down, say your prayers, and hope you don't dirty your trousers, which I never did, like. But I never had lice. Never. Well, she had this stuff called AL-63, this powder. And they wrote it in the same youth clothes. They never got lousy, never got lousy. No.
Did you suffer from other things in the climate?
I once had a bad foot. And all the steam came up and the flesh started to separate on the bad foot. It was clenched feet, actually. Just on the gap, just still burning water all the time. So only the one foot was up there, bothered me. Put the sulfur powder and sulfur malate powder on, and we came up the line, and then a couple of weeks on the other line. And I went to a hell of a high temperature, sand fly there, you know, what happened. But again, I up the line, and I got over it. I've had no bother since. There's one time I had a big blind boil on my armpit. When I put my equipment on, I was rubbing. I was an agony. And when we came up the line, I went there and all the other tents. I had a look. Oh, I said, come back and trade you. So, I'm not trading, I think. Yeah, you'll do what he's pushing you. He's lying on a stretcher, Teddy. He's put your left hand under your head. So, like a line. And I look away, he said. And I felt the jab, and a wonderful sense of relief. And I heard a clatter. The stretcher bird had faded. It got his face. The same man, took him off. But when he seen all the pus come out, he
Were you receiving inoculations against...
We did when I went abroad. The PAB. And when we went to Vienna, with the typhus, that was a big needle, which had no ill effects. But you had knocked up for 3 or 4 years on the other one. But the typhus, I think that's 3 kilometers, I think it's destroyed.
You said that you had the worst action of the war, in effect, in this second phase when
that's
you were in Italy.
What
happened there?
Well, these two figures had to be taken, Germano and Lavera, and the Germans went to hell, and that was it. You know, you had a wave after wave of everybody on both sides. They went to change 13 times.
In relation to where you were, where were these objectives? What kind of ground were you moving over?
We were on the hillside. We were them high. We were high. Right high up. On the villa.
How did you attack them? Was it open order, of First World War stuff, or what?
By sneaking up, if you could, you say. In the dark.
So still the actions were basically in the dark, and during the day you were lying quiet.
That's right. I was shot in place, right hand in Sunderland. You know, these whole platoon, or what was that even platoon? Well, I was suffocated from the manual. But I got a big toot in Tamil, you know, safe for an hammer in Tamil, it's big shells. And I took refuge in the church. And the church was, you know, we were 3 foot thick mud, you know. And one of them demolished the church, and they were all suffocated. And big time I dragged them out, they were all dead. Maybe the little one died by blood, or the one that died of suffocation. Well, 15 of them, I'd like to get them on one fell swoop. Shot in place.
I think you said you were against the parachutists at this time.
You see, after Crete, the Germans left the Soviet army and created the parachutes. Hitler said, no more parachutes. He was never remotely greenish. We were not interested, he was great. But he just threw a man's eyes away. So Hitler said that the fight on the ground. And they're all big lads, man. And I had one regiment called the Sly Metal Men, 2 meters. And then followed the 6 foot 6 in the army.
Did you take any prisoners?
Not my immediate vicinity, but there were prisoners taken, you know. In the flat pool, you know, going on up the hills. We took a connection of all that prisoners just one day later. No, he couldn't come north and south. The irrigation company, there's a irrigation canal in Mira, across the river. And it's incessant rain. There's no sunshine, there's no where the sun was. And the compasses we had, Ingersoll, they were good quality, but they were no good because that would stay reinforcement in these canal banks, you see. And we were on the boat, the Jays were on the boat, the Poles were on the boat. One of our companies, some of the lads were taken prisoner by the Polish. They'd gone in this church to make the fire grow up, and the Polish were in. And they picked the lad back and knocked him above them and all this stuff.
They hit them?
Aye, well, the officer came through and knocked his teeth out.
Was this using the butts of the rifles or whatever?
And fortunately, the Polish were in, Polish troops. And the Germans, they'd been abusing these lads, asking them to intercede for mercy. Didn't go. We weren't shot, but the force could. The poor, I couldn't get anybody. But the way them people hit each other, you know, you don't understand.
The Poles killed the Germans, killed the parachutists. That's quite amazing.
But I saw the officer, his muscles all burst up, his wrists were cut about a dozen pieces. And his teeth were out.
So you got that platoon back?
Right.
In the fighting for the two places you named,
the man on the villa.
And you're fighting up the slope.
Right.
And at night time, as you said.
Right.
What kind of support did you have?
Artillery. But it was all infantry work.
No tanks at all?
No, you couldn't get tanks up there.
And then presumably you'd be into house-to-house fighting, were you?
Well, what was that? It was around ruins, you know. And you know, the same attack method was going to expand the corpses. When the mortar started, you know, the corpses burst. The smell was terrible. And if you had a couple of terriers, you smell it in your teeth, you know. And just, you get used to it.
When you got through, eventually drove them out, were any civilians left in the towns?
Pardon?
Were any civilians left in these places?
Oh, no, they're all fled. The only villages, actually, were villages. And we came out to a place called Montefiore Conca, on west. And those people, they couldn't do enough for us. They didn't have to, but they couldn't do enough for us, you know. And they used to tell us, because they were in full view of these hip mountains, these hills. You see, at night time, the whole hill was afire. How the hell anybody could survive up there, you know? We were surprised, you know. The snow, all after being back there, since the month of the year, and one or two of the people in there were still alive. They all didn't get them going back. We came into a house with a family, and the boss was Senior Rena Veronica. She was in her 70s. She'd never been married. A lover, her boyfriend, had died in youth, and never gotten married. Her father was alive, the old man. He must have been nearly 90. about 10 of us in this house, we've been at Pineapple Town. And we always had the old man sitting in his own chair. He had the same old stuff too. He'd been in there with one of his life, in 90 years, and big city. He bought a watch, and he still had the watch. He's 70 years old, he still had a watch, and 70 later, still in his town.
Italy, of course, was out of the war then. Well, it was out of the German side of the war. Did you come across any of the Italy freedom fighters, the Macchi or whatever they call them?
The partisans. Well, later on, towards the end of the campaign, but not while the battle.
Not while this was on.
No, the jelly people.
Did you come across scenes of German brutality towards the civilians?
I often, I fear, I hope we're in with it. You see a lot of pretty person, I mean, a foul person. Little the village to our farm, I took all the girls away for the Brussels. And I think you were walking cutting out like us, you know, damn that. But they wouldn't deal with Hitler's ideas, Martin Lewis, you know. And when you told them Hitler was a Jew, they were astounded, you know. No, oh, his name's Hitler Gruber, you know. No. I wouldn't believe it.
Did the average British soldier treat the Italian civilians with respect?
Well, I would say yes. I mean, I know one or two, I remember one incident where some fellows got nasty, you know, but as far as the daylight of Dylan McCone's friend, I think we all had a fair name, you know, as far as because whenever you took a village, when you captured a village, you went back there to rest. So if you abused the civvies, you get a hard time. Eh? That was the way it was with us. And then one incident, the day the king came to Perugia, we were getting the day up and on the route, and up to the king left for a nice town up in the hills. We were sitting in this chappy, and this fellow was drunk, and this man with his wife came in, and I told him, lady, he would tell a nice, well set up paper. And the soldier sort of more stuff and more than what he wanted about him. I was going to interfere, but the lad says, hey, whatever, Teddy. This was his own friends coming, going to my way, but it was a nasty dirty incident. He was drunk, he was drunk. That's the only incident I had of a fellow of you and I trying to pop in there. I mean, most of them are happy to accommodate you, you know. You should give him a pair of boots, a pair of trousers, you know. Because I had an out. Before I went to San Marino, San Marino is an escarpment, you see, it was all behind the tracing tape. The Germans were once supposed to be there, but you see the bubbles. When this little village over there, escarpment was on Verrocchio. Living with his Italian farmer and his wife, and the string of bands, they called him Cristoforo Passini. And he used to pull up, so he said, he's not poor, he couldn't afford a mule on a cow. And it was a Saturday night, and we were just sitting on the house, and you know, he was down the line, you know, full of bread and all this. And on the Sunday, I'd be on the church here. And she was going to get a ship. He's really like a bloody axle. And I gave a damn new Gillette, and I broke a home and bridge. And that man was delighted. He was absolutely delighted. There's a little family there. We get all our biscuits and chocolate, you know. You know, I am Russian. American Russian. Regina was having American Russian. To get them to them with chocolate. We real hard tack chocolate now, but just to get the bands, you know.
You mentioned there about preparing to go into the line and feeling rather red. Does this get worse the more that you survive, the longer you're there?
No, it's all the same. All the same depth. From the first time you got into the well, as far as I was concerned.
What do you say, if you're afraid of a feeling of dread? What exactly, what kind of feeling was it?
Doom. Self-pity, perhaps, you know, you see. The water that joined is pretty lucky, man. But the same feeling down the pit when a man was killed. You get in and back and by. The same awful feeling. Awful. AWE, That's kind of awful. Mystery of God may happen.
Is there any other memories of this rather horrendous battle that you had in the, it was the Gothic line, wasn't it?
No, yeah.
Have you had any other memories of that before moving on to the next phase?
The only one I have a number of the kindness of the people with Montmajor Condra. The way they treat us, they open their hearts, they close up with stubborn for you, they've always got your brand new approach, man. When you come up the line of being that line, when they wouldn't even call them off the building, you know. Company's changed by new, we've gone to the last underwear, right? And of course, we used to burn the stuff, but the right guys wouldn't do it, they didn't do it themselves. That's poor.
Did you know how the war was going on?
Oh, yes, when you were
worldwide, in
well,
a sense.
Well, that way, yeah. The Russians put them on Timoshenko and Zhukov and Modena, you know, and Konya. Oh, God, no, oh, what if a Konya from Vienna? Marshal Konya, you understood none of that. Konya went chasing a big child to go.
Did you get feelings that Italy was being forgotten in this great activity that was going on elsewhere?
We never thought we'd have forgotten arms or anything, you know, but we always get mentioned on the radio and pushing up, just got an enemy capital to capture Vienna, right?
So after you, after the Gothic line and you say getting into the lower area of the Po Valley, what were the changes down there that you had to now face?
The change in terrain, getting a fight not a guy. You know, I mean, when you're in the hills and ridges, you didn't have to look back. Right? But when you got the flat pit, you look all around you. You know, didn't know what was what.
It was much more fluid, was it?
Right, no, yeah, the incessant rain, no cloud. You couldn't tell north and south. You know, you might think you're running for you. You're not behind your own headquarters.
What state was the ground?
Soft. Mud. Up your knees. You couldn't run. Up your knees. I mean, I got some lads that all rotating, didn't I? We could have been able to run.
And you were still fighting in these conditions, still moving.
Yes. All right, all right. Falling properly. That's as far as we got. We pull up landing on the Greece.
The Germans, were the Germans showing any signs of losing their quality?
Yes, every sign, yes. They were getting rags. Women's coats, fur coats on.
Were they giving themselves up a little bit easier? Or? Similar more than coming in.
Well, the port is surrounded by the Dutton, you know. After the port is all the way up Italy. And most of the bubbles come in and got a good job.
To this country?
Right.
Any memories of that particular area of action on the low ground?
No, just the smallest, you know. The three of us went and set a pick of mine up. The wooden mine, because the only use the wooden mine, because it couldn't be detected with detectors at all. And I'm quite sure the German pioneer left it for us to say. You see now when he lifted the mud off of the truck, trucking things on, he put the truck off up the wrong way. So you can see that we're breaking the truck in things. And the truck had been put on the wrong way, the mud being put on the So all we did was put a thing on and pull it, and it didn't get off. It was just like lying there in the spring in the river. There was some mines we wanted out to touch. And it was almost called a regal mine. It was nitroglycerin. We wanted out to touch at all. You had to fire them from a safe distance. Because nitroglycerin is very, very volatile. It's not like dynamite or TNT. We came to one scene, the Bendy Mosley Crossroads. And we must have had a stack of stuff there, because the hole was 50 feet deep, 800 feet wide. Well done with dead Jones. The down ourselves up, nitroglycerin ain't gone off. And we're all completely naked. With the local lad, we come to all the caves up.
The mines were becoming more sophisticated and difficult to deal with.
Oh, yes, indeed. That was a real mine. You had the one, what was it called, a pitch mine made of coal tar and glass. And not steel, you know. I suppose it'll all be in the news, eh, that thing. But as I say, there, it was fossil paid, that was long yourself.
What date would it be now that you're up in the Po area of Italy?
Well, it'd be back in November, because the land had increased December the 3rd. 1944. Just before the Civil War started.
So you're taken out of the line, were you, at that point?
Didn't even get a wash. No. Won't even call a damn thing. Don't the Roman the wagons, on the airplane, the deporters, the Brindisi, for sure, land of Athens.
Any hopes that you were going home, or?
No, when you were gone. But the first thing I knew happened when I circled around, I saw the coppers. And I was the only one that came with it, and I thought, well, that was great. And they were like, well, that wasn't all a good thing, what were there for? Weren't all a dancing.
Were you looking forward to it, once you knew where you were going?
Once you knew where I was going, I know.
But you weren't anticipating any problems in Greece?
The only problems we had, really, was starvation, hunger. I could only be supplied by air. And I had to give up and stuff to the bridge.
Did you land in Athens?
Aye, but it's called Hassani. That's now Athens Airport.
What happened to you then?
We just go up in the city, and got billets, and as the days followed on, we got pulled back, all that. We're along the safe ones, couldn't go back any further. And one day, school, we were attacked, and that was it. Came up, and one day, the civilians really didn't want to fight us. One or two of them, zealots did, you say, but the locals didn't, you know, they didn't want to fight at all.
What was the situation that had got you there? What was going on in Greece?
Well, the communists tried to attack us. So we knew. I mean, long before Churchill made his Iron Curtain speech, we called it the Iron Ring. From Poland, but going through Europe, Greece was the last link in the chain. And Churchill would determine how it was. One of my men did support the wrong side. The king, they didn't want the king. And then the Greek royal family, the Germans, forced on the Greeks by the great powers. I mean, we have one here. Bill the Greek, Edinburgh, he's frozen on the British paper. But nobody wanted him. I don't know. But they were frozen on the Greek.
And you were in effect on the royal side.
We were on their side, yes. The wrong side.
What was the... Did the communists have a name for their movement?
Elas. E with one L. Because Elas are two of the Greeks. They call us Elas, or Eorka. That's two names, Elas and Eorka.
Was it disturbing for you to find yourself in a situation where you really were acting to support a civilian power? You weren't fighting in any...
You had your cold control problems, eh? We'd never done cold control. My born little sergeant, Mary Wilson, he must have been 60. But he'd done India cold control. And he just told us what to do, you know, what to walk, and you like them, don't. You know. I think one of the most was there, we shared our weapons with him.
With the Greeks?
I met a nice family there, you know. But they did not want a German king to throw them out after, it was in the 60s, wasn't it? And they got rid of
it. So you landed in Athens and you say you went up into accommodation. Whereabouts were you?
Just the various guest houses and hotels, you know, down the main street.
And what happened during the course of a day, say, for example?
Well, you just get a lot about chasing me, giving the rifles, cutting the rifles up from here.
Well,